Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast. Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I am Ellie Gibson.
You are, and I am Helen Thorne. And who's on the couch with us tonight, Ellie?
It's Dr. Afroza Ahmed. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I am Dr. Afroza Ahmed, or otherwise known as Mummy. To my three boys, who's Zaid, Faris and Tariq, and I really hope they're tucked in bed right now.
Oh, how old are they? How old are your boys?
They're 13, 11 and 7.
Oh, so quite a range there.
Quite a range, yes. The third one was like, had to convince husband, hence there was a gap.
Oh, it took you 6 years of nagging, threatening bribes?
Threatening bribes, and he was worried we wouldn't fit in the car.
Did you just get a bigger car?
I promised we wouldn't go down the MPV route.
And you did.
But so no, we found a Honda.
Oh.
It sits six people.
So
the third one was okay.
Does your youngest son know that he would have been closer to his brothers if the car issue had been solved previously?
No.
Well, he does now.
It's going
on the internet.
Yes.
Yes. So we know each other because we actually went to school together.
A long, long time ago.
Let's just say it was over 5, 10.
Not Victorian times, as my little one says.
20 years.
Yeah. Black and white times, as my children say. Was it black in black and white?
Black
no.
And white times,
no.
Yes.
So thank you for coming on the podcast. Now, you're also a mummy blogger. Tell us about your blog.
Okay, so throughout life, I've always been approached for advice by friends and family. I don't know why, they must be desperate. and also professionally, as a GP, you spend your time giving advice.
So you're basically an agony aunt for verrucas and knits, aren't you?
Well, a little bit more.
Not to degrade.
Yeah, yeah. No, add in the paracetamol.
The 7 years of training.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As my husband says, you just sit at a desk all day giving antibiotics, but.
But you get paid well for it, so up his ass.
Exactly. Something like that, exactly.
Can I ask what does he do for a living?
He's an interventional radiologist, he works at St Thomas's. And he's a consultant, so he's a hospital doctor.
So he stands up at a desk all day, basically.
Patients. Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, yeah, same, yeah. Same.
Same. I think he thinks they're the same, same.
Yeah. So why did you become a GP? What was the motivation?
My mum and dad forced me.
No. Really?
I had to fill in my UCAS form. I thought, what shall I do? I've got three sciences. There was a little bit of family pressure, but I didn't really know what else to go into. I think being of an Asian background, you are forced into certain specialties, either engineering, accountancy, doctor, and doctor.
They're the trends.
They're the big hitters, and that's still that way. And I promised my son that they wouldn't have to go that way. But I said, one out of three of you has to be a doctor, please.
No pressure.
Yeah.
One of you can go to drama school. One of you can be, a zookeeper. But one of you is going to look after mummy and earn the money.
Exactly. I've got two sons and I'm like, if one of them could be gay, I just want someone to go to musicals with to help me choose sequin cat suits. I just don't think that's too much to ask.
Yes, it's not kind of by default, but once I got into it, I think it was something I can't imagine doing anything else now. It's such a difference. This is going to sound really boring, but it really does make a difference helping people. And I think as a mom, sometimes you do lose yourself, and going to work you think, I am important and I can make a difference.
I was wondering if that would be a thing, because obviously as a mum, especially with three kids, you do so much caring for others at home.
Yeah.
Does it not feel like, oh, now I have to go and care for all these other people and yes. I didn't even give birth to them.
No.
But there's a time limit, Ellie. That's a lovely thing about patience. You're like, yes. and it's time to go now. And yeah. you don't have to probably see that person ever again.
Yeah. At the moment, I'm called a locum GP.
Okay.
So I work in various different practices. So I actually don't see them again.
Sounds dreamy.
So that's quite an advantage. But I think it's just an extension sometimes of what you do at home and what you do at work as a GP. Because you're telling people what to do, you're organising things, you're multitasking, and you're giving advice, but you don't take the advice yourself.
Right, yeah.
So, of course, you know, tell people to lose weight, but, you know, you open the drawer and you've got chocolate inside.
How do you... I'm fascinated. How do you, as a doctor, say you must lose weight? Have you got a special phrase? Because I once went to the doctor and he said to me, so how long have you been short for your weight? How do you do it, Fraser?
We can't say the F word.
Oh, f*** off out of my surgery.
not that one. Yes, that one. The second one. Yeah, we can't say that one.
Okay.
Oh, no, my kids can't listen to it.
Oh, we'll bleep it. We'll bleep it.
Yeah. Right, so, sure. Yeah, we can't say the fat word.
Yeah.
So, you know, we say, look, there's certain things in your control that can help your situation, such as your weight. It's very hard. You've got to empathise, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But fluffy. Make it fluffy.
Make it nice. Yeah.
Make it nice.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I'm not harsh.
Oh, I want to come to you.
Oh, come. I still will tell you to get lost after 10 minutes.
Sounds like we're married. So how long have you been a GP for?
So I go by the age of my children now. So he's 13, so probably 14. 14 yeah. years.
Oh, wow. So you've had a lot of time being a GP
yeah.
and being pregnant. How was that?
Yeah, the pregnancy you kind of forget once you've had children because, you know, you keep going back for more. Obviously, you must forget, otherwise you wouldn't do it again. So my pregnancies were actually okay. But I've always remember now of... I can't remember that time when I didn't have children. I can only remember memories from when my son was born. Everything before that is a blur.
You did exist. I knew you when you were 16. I can confirm you were a person. You were a real person.
Okay. I just don't have any recollection. Like, what year did you do this? Well, my son's 7, so I think I did that when I was, you know, everything is around them.
Yeah.
Motherhood just, I can't, it's all a blur before that.
It's, you know, it does have that effect, I find.
Yeah. I found that because I was basically drunk for the first decade of my, you know, like, well, my 20s, basically, yeah. So that's why that's a blur. But, yeah, and then you become a mum and you're really tired, so,
always tired, yes. And I think also in society we have a tendency to medicalise everything.
Mm.
So I get patients who say, or especially mothers, that they're tired, and I'm like, no, you're a mother. That's not anything medical.
Right, and that's normal.
That's normal, you know. You're tired because you're doing everything and you've got lots of children or you're trying to organise life at home as well as working. And, we're tired because of lifestyle. And sometimes medically there's not an answer.
Are you saying there is no magic bullet for being exhausted all of the time?
If you have children, no.
Oh, God. Helen, we've made a terrible mistake.
Oh, no. You guys keep drinking.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the doctor has said.
Thank you.
You guys keep drinking.
Just could you put that doctor's down on your orders? Slip? Yes, will you?
That would have to be a private prescription.
If you could prescribe a box of Sauvignon Blanc, that would be lovely. That would be an absolute, absolute treat.
Oh, my God. You should have some kind of Harley Street, just mum's medical practice and just, like, give women wine or prescription.
That's true. Yeah. Have a massage chair.
Yes. And just have, like, a nap room where people can go to. It's like, to have some kind of... you know, fancy pants like mum therapy, but it's really just wine and a nap.
Exactly.
In a darkened room. Exactly.
So as a doctor, kind of what are your sort of top tips for raising healthy children? Like, do you have to give them vitamin? I know you've written it on your blog. Like, do you have to give them vitamin pills?
Yeah. It's quite a common question, actually. And again, I think it comes back to this whole idea of medicalising stuff. You know, vitamins are not essential. What is essential is a healthy diet. You know, we don't have to give our children, get out of this thing about giving them tablets. And when we talk about healthy thing, I think also we have to incorporate three factors: diet, exercise, and mental well-being. And I think that third thing is so much more important nowadays.
Mm.
I've just done the 11 plus with my older two, and God help me.
Really?
It was worse than medical finals.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. And part of dealing with that was actually... not the academic side of things, but managing their anxiety, their confidence and their stress of going through exams. And it's so competitive, especially in West London where we are.
Mm.
It's extremely competitive. So, you know, when we're talking about raising healthy children, you must not forget that last bit, especially with boys.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, because you wrote about that, about raising boys as well. And about having. So you went for the third. Was there any kind of, will I get a girl, or did you think you were going
to
get a...
I kind of knew pretty much straight away through the pregnancy that I was going to have a boy, because it felt exactly the same.
Yeah.
I personally love a household with three, because as a kid, I think it's much more fun, because I was from a family of two. So when I had to scream with my brother and I wanted to go off, there was no one to go off with.
Yeah.
You know, for them, it's always, there's someone always to play with.
Yeah, or punch, or hit, so
for them, I think there's always banter in the house, but it's a nice banter. You know, the house feels lively. So,
is there no chance you will at any point be getting an even bigger car?
So my husband's words were, "I will jump off a cliff," and he did look into having a snip at one point, but no, no.
That's what I don't understand, because we've got two. I'm 38, so you know, possibly could cough out another one. Yes. And I said, "Well, if you really don't want any more kids,
yes,
go snippy snip snips." And he's like, "Oh no, I couldn't do that." I was like, "No, pardon."
Some men, I think of that as, you know, losing some of their manlyhood or their persona.
God forbid that they have to have any physical changes having children.
The rest of us are taking pills every day or having injections every 3 months or having things tied up.
Yes.
How many coils have you got now?
All the coils.
We don't want to
one in each ear.
I'm not sure your listeners want to know.
Do you talk about contraception to your... I was going to say your listeners. we have listeners. We have patients. Do you talk... What's your usual advice about contraception after giving birth? I mean, not that you're a good example. All the babies you've been having.
They were planned.
You and your sex you're having all the time. Okay.
She's done it three times. Oh, imagine that.
Oh, cool. Dear.
Yes, us doctors are very good at planning. Advice to patients about contraception? You know, usually when there's a problem, that's when patients come to us.
Yeah.
You know, it's not... But, you know, when we see women with children, we always talk about contraception, especially at those six-week checks, for example. You know, we try to put it in there. And then there's a misconception that women think when you're breastfeeding that, you know, that's contraception, but it's not.
Mm.
That's a common mistake.
Yes, I found it actually worked well. If I had a baby on my breast, my husband didn't want to f*** me. So it really, really worked a treat.
I mean, that's, you know... Right. That's one way of doing it.
That's free on the NHS.
Yes. God bless the NHS. Yes. We're going to say that about 60 times in this podcast as well. Good.
Now let's talk about technology and addiction, because this is something else you've written about on your blog.
Yes.
And you did this post, and you there was a quote from another doctor, which was, I think, handing your child a smartphone is like giving them wine or heroin. Now my question is, are you not supposed to give them wine or heroin? Is that a thing?
Oh dear.
Do you agree with that? Do you think that's really...
I think it's a shocking statement to try and grab someone's attention. And I think I agree with the kind of impact of it, that, you know, if you have a lot of wine, it can lead to alcohol disorder, you know, someone become addicted. And I think that was what he was trying to get at.
Right.
That when you give your child these mobile devices, I'm not talking about computers which stay in a room, these mobile devices these children are carrying around with them constantly, that can lead to technology addiction. And that's something that is real. Mm. And I think as parents, we have to look out for symptoms and signs of technology addiction.
So how do you know when it's crossed the line from just being interested in technology to actually an addiction?
So various things, just like alcohol or someone who's got bulimia, if they're hiding it, if they're spending lots of time on it, social isolation, physical symptoms as well, for example, you know, neck ache or aggressiveness if you take it away, if they're constantly anxious without their phone, something called carpal tunnel, when you get a nerve that's compressed because they're holding it for so long.
Helen suffers from Instagram wrists. It's like tennis elbow.
I had to go to the physio because I had Instagram elbow anyway.
when patients come to me with RSI, kind of repetitive strain, and I used to be, due to your laptop, but now it's like, are you on your phone?
Really?
Yeah, so we see that a lot.
Really? Yeah, so that's like a real thing?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the worst thing is when you take your phone into the bathroom, then you know you've crossed the line.
That would be awful, Erin Gibson.
I'd never do that.
Who would do that?
No, in the toilet. You don't. You can't. Yeah. then you know you've got problems.
Okie dokie.
We've got problems. So many problems.
All right, so we're going to lock the door, and then Fraser's going to be here for the next week to sort ourselves out.
Monitor you guys.
We need it. We need your help.
Yes. As we like chug back lots of cheap wine.
I was gonna say, at least we're not hiding our drinking. No. we don't drink in the toilet. I feel like that would be the lowest of the low.
No.
But you've also, in that article, you included your top 10 tips for like managing all this stuff. So what are they?
So I think the biggest thing about raising children on any issue is you're their biggest influence. So if you're constantly on your phone, then obviously that's a big no. And I think that's the most important thing. We have to take some responsibility. Secondly, I think one of the biggest things is my kids know from the beginning that, right, when they come over to school, they have a little bit of downtime with the mobile phones or gaming, whatever you want to do. And then they put it off for an hour, and then a little bit afterwards, after dinner. They know those are the times, that's enforced, that's from day one. You know, rules from the beginning, no phones at restaurants, no phones when we go to people's houses, you know. And they don't argue because they know that routine. These phones, they've entered our homes, they're here to stay. We've got to acknowledge that. But at the same time,
and they're going to be part of their lives, and as they grow up, they do need to know how to interact with this stuff and to use it for work, basically.
And even at my son's school, you know, the timetables are on the phones, their now emails are on the phones. It's part of life. We've just got to be sensible about it. And the other, I think my third biggest tip would be, you know, they go on the phones when they're bored. So provide something for them. You know, the dishes can wait, the house can wait. This is the time to spend with your children. Go out to the park, provide some alternative. Otherwise, they'll go on the phone. So I think it's that simple.
Yes.
All right, done.
I'm feeling empowered.
I am too. Does it mean we have to go to the park, though, Ellie?
Yeah, cool. Spend time with your children.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I think we've done sort of health chat.
Yes,
and blog chat.
Yes.
Let's move on to a slightly more serious subject than our children's health. Let's have, and we've never done this on the podcast before, let's have a religion chat. So here's the thing. I sort of, you know, I've been Facebook friends with you, obviously, for a while.
Yeah.
And you wrote a post on your Facebook. I think it was after the attacks in, the terror attacks in London. Was it the London Bridge ones happened? Yeah. And you wrote this post, which I just thought was amazing and really touched me about, you know, how it feels to be a Muslim in this country when this kind of thing is going on. And I mean, I don't want to,
I think there's this thing, you know, I don't like to be victimised, but there's this thing about Muslims that we have to answer for every single Muslim in this country or abroad that does something in the name of religion. And, you know, you get politicians saying you've got to, you know, make sure, stamp this out in your community. I don't know these people. They happen to say they're the same religion, you know. And I said, I can't even get my child to, you know, get off his tablet sometimes, or How am I supposed to tell
how am I supposed
him?
To stop terrorism?
Exactly. What do you want me to do? You know, you want me to go around. I don't even go to the mosque. Okay, I'm not saying it's not a place that you don't, that's not a good place, but it's just not part of my life at the present.
Mm. Yeah. In the same way, there are millions of Christians in this country who don't go to church.
Exactly. Yeah. So you feel this pressure, I think, from either the media or people like politicians who say that we must do something. But I see it as the same. I must do something if there's a paedophile next to me, or if there's someone who's, you know, being cruel to animals, or stranger. It's all, terrorism is all in the same boat.
Mm.
You know, these are mentally deranged people that have nothing to do with us.
Mm.
And I think this is where having three Muslim boys, I think they're going to face a different challenge to boys of other faiths. Because I think constantly in society, at one point, someone is going to say, you have to answer for those people.
Mm.
And I say to them, if someone says that to you, it's not an if, it's a when, that's great, because it's dialogue.
Mm.
And we need dialogue.
Yeah.
Be friends with people from all different parts of life, you know. So, you know, when you've got someone and they see on the news someone's done a terror attack in the name of religion, in Islam, and they say, oh God, those Muslims are such fanatics. I want them to think, no, actually, you know what? Zaid's mom, she's a Muslim, and she made the best curry. She is not a fanatic.
Yeah.
Yeah?
She's not making suicide vests. She's making delicious rice.
Exactly.
I mean, my ass exploded, but I mean...
that's a different kind of explosion, you know? So, and that's what I want for my children, to be happy when people talk to them, but I feel there's a pressure they have to answer for everyone, and I think that's particularly unique about being a Muslim in Britain today. Mm. Mm.
And do they feel that? I mean, how aware do you think?
Yeah, I don't think the younger ones do. I think the older one is, he's getting like that. No one's actually physically or verbally said anything, but he's definitely aware that, oh, God, look, you know, all these people who are doing all these acts are all Muslims. And I say, yes, but it's got nothing to do with religion. In the same way when Hitler did what, you know, the atrocities, we don't define him by his religion. He was a madman.
Mm, mm.
And that's what these people are. There's a ripple effect with the Muslims in this country. You know, whenever, I think there was one terrorist attack, I think after 9/11, and I felt very uncomfortable about going outside with a scarf.
Mm.
You know, because you thought, God, this is so terrible, but you're getting getting lumped together with those people. So I don't feel that way as now.
Yeah.
I think things have changed, and you know, I think we've got to integrate, we've got to know each other.
Yeah.
And I want my sons to have friends of all walks of life. So that when they see these things, they're like, actually, you know what? Muslims aren't like that.
Yeah, and I feel like it's changing. I mean, especially my kids go to a pretty progressive, you know, inner city London school.
Yeah.
And what's great is that different religious, you know, festivals are celebrated throughout the year.
Yeah.
And I thought even that is a fantastic
gesture.
Yeah. And because I think one of the difficult things is when you talk about, oh, there shouldn't be any religion in schools, but there should be. Yes. Education about all religions. Exactly. It shouldn't just be Christianity or Islam or any of those sort of things.
Yeah.
I think what's really fantastic is when the dialogue, when people don't feel frightened to ask questions or feel like they can't discuss it.
Yeah. I mean, I've had people say, you know, why do you wear this scarf? And I'm so grateful that I can go into their lives and I can tell them about why, or I can learn something from them. And I think we have to just start talking.
And do you think, I mean, having a new mayor... Have you seen much of a change in London?
I don't think there's been much change in London, but I was in Paris once, and it was actually my 40th, and we were in the taxi, and he goes, you come from a wonderful country. And I said, oh, yeah, you know, of course, but why? And so he said, because we can never elect someone like that.
Really?
Yeah, and it shows your tolerance and faith as Londoners. And I've never felt so proud to be British at that moment.
Oh, stop, I'm going to cry! That's so fantastic.
We love you, Sadiq.
We love you, Sadiq. Yeah. We're voting for you. Oh, my God.
So, you know, and why do we have to see him as the first Muslim mayor? He's a mayor.
Mm. Yeah.
We don't have to label everyone. And let's just judge him by his job, not his faith.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. So when you and I were at school together years ago,
I don't remember
thinking of you as a Muslim as that, but anymore than I thought Natasha's from Peckham, exactly. And, you know, Louise is white, and, yeah. You know, it wasn't, I don't remember it sort of, but again, maybe this is white privilege, maybe that your experience was different, but no. I don't remember it being like a thing in my head.
No, yeah.
Because ISIS wasn't a thing as well, exactly. And 9/11 hadn't happened.
Yeah.
And do you think that's, do you worry about that having changed now because yeah. of what's happened for your boys at school, yeah. for example?
I mean, so at school, I never experienced racism. You know, and I think that's a wonderful thing to say.
Mm.
I never felt that I was defined by, because I wore the scarf quite later on at school, and it was, no, everyone was, you know, they were like, what's that thing on your head? But it wasn't in a bad way, just an inquisitive way.
Is it from New Look? Where can I get one?
Yeah, no, it's more like, is it from Primark? So, yeah, no, Primark wasn't around then, was it?
No, you had your peacocks.
I'll tell you what you had. Yes. You had Mark 1 in Lewisham Shopping Centre. Yeah. Opposite the Smiths.
Oh,
and Dixon's.
Oh, obviously, Dixon's. You spent a lot of time in
how you lived back then.
Dangerous times. Used
to go in Dixon's and play Sonic the Hedgehog on the Mega Drive. Anyway, sorry. Carry on with the religion chat.
Yeah, the religion chat.
But you were saying at school.
At school. So for me, I took a positive experience. For my sons, you know, they're loving school. I think I'll give you an example. My 6-year-old, he was yawning when it's Christmas carols.
Mm-hmm.
I know his kids doing his fidgeting, and you know, he'd had a long day. And I got a call from the headmaster, and he said, you know, this is a bit disrespectful, and I thought, yeah, but he's 6 and he was tired. But I kind of question whether he wasn't a Muslim kid, would that phone call have happened?
Really, yeah.
So, you know, and I just, this whole thing where we have to define people by their faiths, rather than he's just a child who was tired.
And the fact that question even pops into your mind, yes. You have to consider that and worry about that and think.
I think it's a different challenge, you know. And I think as mothers of Muslim boys, we have to worry about pornography and drugs and alcohol, but we really have to worry about, are they being groomed in a way that other sections of society aren't. And that's a real threat for us and a real worry for us, especially with boys. And when they're going on the internet, who are they talking to? And we try and be very open, you know, be open about religion, about sex, about alcohol and drugs, whatever it is, because we want that to come from us, not some, you know, person off the internet who has fanatical ideas. So I think it's a very different times for parents.
Yeah, because our children are still quite young. So, yeah, I'm terrified of how do you walk that line between allowing them to have their own privacy and their own life and their own space online and like, well, just spying on them all the time, which is my natural instinct.
We do spy, but then I've said to them they can look at my phone as well.
That's quite brave of you. Yes,
but I do delete stuff because I know they might look at it. But yeah,
cover your tracks. Have a second phone.
Yes, but we've said, okay, we'll look at yours and you can look at ours.
I mean, what sort of questions have your boys, I mean, what do you have a special time as a family?
Yep.
How do you kind of create that environment where they can have that dialogue with you?
Well, if you know boys, they never ask anything.
Right, yes.
Yeah, they don't talk.
Yeah.
So that's another challenge. So it's very organic. So if I feel that I need to talk about drugs or pornography or terrorism, it usually is something, an event that's happened. Like we try and watch TV together. And, you know, something might happen on those, like the Grenfell Tower. And, you know, my son was, oh, is that a terrorist attack? You know, you kind of feel sad that's his first thought, that we live in that world. There's no, I think with boys also, you know, there's not this lovey-dovey, let's talk about feelings kind of thing. And also there's a bit of macho-ness. They don't want to do it in front of the other boys. So talk to them individually.
That's a really good idea.
They're a lot more open. And bedtime's the best time because they never want to go to bed. And they're very talkative then.
All of a sudden.
Very talkative. So that's another good time that I can.
My husband's the same now. I'll be like, right, I'm going to sleep now. By the way, we need to talk to the window cleaner. Oh, shut up. Oh, not now. You've had all night to talk about when you're going to take the car in for an MOT. Not now.
No.
I've been quite lucky so far because Charlie's my eldest and he's only 6. So to be honest with you, when things like the London attacks, the London Bridge attacks happened, I just sort of didn't let him watch the news and sort of pretended it wasn't really happening.
Yeah.
So, but I'm interested in, there's going to come a day where that's not feasible anymore. So I guess I'm asking both of you, how do you deal with that?
I think there's a fine line between wanting to protect them and wrap them up in cotton wool, but yet want them to know what's going on and teach them the right thing. And again, I think being a Muslim mum, that does have a different connotation, because we're kind of lumped with them and we kind of have to say to our kids, you know, we're not part of them and that's not part of our religion. So there is a little bit of a twist on that. I think personally everyone's different, everyone's situation's different. With my 6-year-old, I wouldn't discuss it. He's not at that maturity. My 11 and 13-year-old are, and their friends talk about it. And, you know, you can go past the Harrow station and you'll see it on the front page of the news. We have to be, they're a lot more open. They've got these phones, they get their news feeds. You know, I think we have to talk about it.
What do you think? Because Matilda's 8?
Yeah, she's coming up to 9. Yeah, and we have, like, the radio on, and that will come up.
Yeah.
And often we do a quick...
Yeah,
turning down. But
the minute I hear the word yew tree, off. That's done.
We don't need to have that conversation yet. But I think well, especially with the London Bridge attack.
Yeah.
We spoke about it. It was a very bad person or person that's who wasn't very well. But there are 99.9% of good in the world.
Yes.
And good people in the world. And I think that's what we try and emphasise, and kindness as well.
Yes, I think that's very important, to not have them fearful that there's these bad things going on in the world, but always talk about the good and always give them hope.
Yeah.
If they live in a world where they're constantly afraid, I think that's, you know, wouldn't want that for any child.
And they're naturally inquisitive. They want to know what's happening in the world.
Yeah.
And we have lots of discussions about Donald Trump. They're kind of, he's almost like the bad villain in the world at the moment. And my kids, like my 6-year-old, is kind of fascinated because we talk about him so much, like, Trump.
Yeah.
And they sort of want to know.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that's great to foster, the love of politics and what's going on in the world and what's going on in your society. You want to foster that. You don't want to shield them. But there's a time for everything, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to rush our kids into growing up. And you'll know it, you know. You don't start off being a parent and think, right, 11, I'm going to talk about the birds and bees. 12, I'm going to talk about politics. 13, I'm going to talk... It doesn't work like that. It's just going to happen organically and you'll know what time is right for your child.
And the younger ones will always learn about it a bit earlier than the older ones.
Of course. I mean, you know, everything is quicker with the younger ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
The first one never gave McDonald's, never watched TV until the age of 7.
Yeah.
And by the third one, you're like, as long as you're breathing, it's fine.
Have an iPad and a lollipop.
Exactly. Here you go. I need to lie down for a bit. Just go, you know. It's definitely different by the middle.
Yeah.
So when you look at the future, like, how do you feel about it? Because I quite often just feel like, God, there's so much terrible stuff going on and so much negative emotions towards different groups and all of that. Do you worry about that a lot? Or do you just think this is, you know...
You can't let that get to you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big believer in practicing abundance and gratitude, and that's what gets me up in the morning. If I get up in the morning and think, oh, my God, are my kids going to be okay? You know, they're going to get on a tube and something's going to happen to them. You go crazy. You go nuts.
Mm.
The way the media is, the way things are, is you're always focusing on the negative because that's good news.
Mm.
But there's so much good in the world and you cannot keep thinking and worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow.
Well, thank you. And thank you for talking about that with us because, you know, and I did want to say, actually, that we always do a running order for our guests. But it's just to give us and the guests an idea of what we might talk about. And Helen, you know, took quite a lot of care over this one because, you know, we wanted to kind of get it right. So thank you, Afrosa, for not pointing out that she started one of the sentences with, as a Muslim... which I noticed when I read it today. What have you done, Helen Thorne? What have you done?
So, listener, you have no idea how embarrassed I am. So last night I read Afrosa's blog. I was like, I'm talking about being a Muslim. I'm going to be really sensitive.
Yeah, really right on.
You know, don't fuck it up. Don't be offensive. All right, really sensitive.
You've offended me like 3 times already.
I'm outraged. More than that.
I typed out all the questions and I'm like, just spell check it. So I did, then sent it off, and then Ellie pointed out that I called you a Muslim. So good.
So as a Muslim, what temperature do you like to be washed at, Afrosa?
Why do you lump us all together? What I don't.
Should we be putting you in a separate cycle?
Exactly, it's all very different.
Where are you originally from, John Lewis?
At least you didn't say Primark.
I would never accuse you of being a Primark Muslim. I would never accuse you.
Okay, I am currently the colour of beetroot. I have a very high temperature. I am very embarrassed and I'm glad there's a doctor in the house.
Hey.
I'm off duty.
Oh, can someone die of embarrassment?
Maybe today.
Maybe. I think that would be my job.
Oh, lovely stuff. There we go. Good. Well, that's enough religion chat.
Done.
Definitely out for another 100 episodes.
good.
Shall we have some scummy mummy confessions, Helen?
We shall. Can I kick off?
Okay, you go for it.
So it was school holidays recently. We took a trip to Italy. On our first stop, we stopped in Naples. We arrived very late. Got to a hotel and I was tired, had a lot of airline food, got into the lift at the hotel and just let one go. Pulled it out. And we just sort of got into the lift. But what I hadn't realised that there was another family.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Behind us.
Oh,
and it was a really
in the lift.
No. Just about to get into the lift.
Oh,
but because I kind of went, and then I farted. There was two teenage girls who screamed and ran away. And then my family are going, God, Mummy's so embarrassing. I was like, it's fine. I giggled. Then I thought, oh, God, we've got to see that family tomorrow at breakfast. And they're like, Will's like, they're not going to come. They're not going to go to breakfast. They don't want to see you.
The country. They're Italian and they've left the country.
Checked out. Yeah.
Never want to see you again.
Yeah. Oh. Gibson, the frozer.
You know when you go to a party, a children's party, and they give you cake and they give you some cake to take home? And they give you, like, a sweet cone. And it's so good. It tastes so good. And you kind of think, why should your child have that? So I ate it in the car.
Mm.
I know, I had to do it quickly, because if you start, have a little bit...
The sweets and the cake.
Yeah. And you can't just have one, because you can't have half a sweet cone, right? So you have to have all of it.
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
you know, you have to kind of... wipe away all the crumbs.
Yeah, so. Otherwise how else would you get diabetes?
And yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're a doctor, you should know.
And I had a muslin, so it's okay.
Never leave home without one. It's an essential.
Yeah. Every muslin needs a muslin. Everyone knows that.
Exactly.
That's a t-shirt. That is a t-shirt.
So I'm going to trademark that.
You can have that.
Okay.
You're welcome.
I got in the car and my six-year-old was like, oh, where's a gift bag? And I said, you know that, Mum? Such a cheap mum. She did not give you anything. So every time we look at this mum in the playground, there's that cheap mum.
Oh no!
Awesome.
I'd rather have a cake.
Eat your cake. Your guilty important. Cake.
Mother of three, cake is everything.
That's it. Absolutely.
That's my confession.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
Oh my God.
It's been so much fun and so nice to see you after years. And,
three children later.
Yes. One of us doesn't look any different, but let's just gloss over that.
Now, where can people find your blog, Afroza?
Yes. www.mum2sons2 as in the number 2 .com.
We'll put that up on our website, etc.
We definitely will. Meanwhile, our book is still available, unbelievably.
Still in print, Ellie.
Still in print.
Who knew? It was cheap on Amazon the other day. Someone was selling one for 4p.
Wow.
A used copy.
Yeah.
I think it was my mum. so it is still available, Scummy Mummies. You can follow us on the Instagram at Scummy Mummies.
Mm-hmm. And we're on Twitter at Scummy Mummies and Facebook. And, of course, go to scummymummies.com for all the live show details.
Yes, and if you like the podcast, thank you so much for listening, and please do rate, review and subscribe, because that really helps push it up the charts.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, until next time.
Bye-bye.
Am I doing better than Dr. Ranch, by the way?
Oh, well, not as filthy, but, it's all right. Okay.
I think that's probably
for the best, considering we had to take that podcast down because the BBC complained. So I think it's fine.
Excellent. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.